Hi, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, where I explore the science of health, human performance, and ultimate potential. My name is Dr. Greg Wells, and I'm a scientist with a PhD in human physiology. I have served as a professor in kinesiology at the University of Toronto and as a scientist in translational medicine at SickKids Hospital. I've also worked with dozens of Olympic-level athletes through the Canadian Sports Centre Network. In this podcast, I do my best to take complex research and make it understandable and actionable for you to improve your health and well-being and perform to your true potential at whatever it is that you care about the most. In each show, I chat with leading experts in the field of productivity, sleep, nutrition, physiology, and psychology, as well as some of the most exceptional performers across all disciplines. Together, we explore the amplifiers that propel us towards high performance and overcome the obstacles that challenge us. Ultimately, I want to share 1% gains that can make a massive difference in your life. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let me know your thoughts and comments on social at Dr. Greg Wells. All right, let's dive in. Today we get to talk to Dr. Alex Hutchinson, who is an accomplished author and journalist. He's known for his expertise in the science of endurance and fitness, and he writes on the topic for several publications, including Outside Magazine, where he is a contributing editor and writes the Sweat Science column, The Globe and Mail, where he writes the Jockology column, and Canadian Running Magazine. He was also a Runner's World columnist from 2012 to 2017. In 2011, he published a practical guide to the science of fitness called Which Comes First, Cardio or Weights? Fitness Myths, Training Truths, and Other Surprising Discoveries from the Science of Exercise. His latest book, Endure, Mind, Body, and the Curiously Elastic Limits of Human Performance, was published in February of 2018. The book's an exploration of the science and mysteries of endurance. Prior to his career in journalism and writing, Alex has a background in physics. He earned a PhD from the University of Cambridge, and during this time, he also competed as a middle and long distance runner for the Canadian national team, mostly as a miler, but also dabbling in some cross country and even a little bit of mountain running. He still runs most days and enjoys the rigors of hard training. Alex has been on the show before. Super excited to have him back. We're having our experts back to go deeper on specific topics and make sure that we're sharing 3 to 4 specific tactics that we can all install into our lives. So I'm really excited to have Alex back on the show again. Let's dive right into it. Hey, everyone. Welcome back, Alex. Thank you for joining us again. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be back, and I look forward to chatting.
Alex, I've prepped everyone, done the intro and the bio prior to us joining this call. People know who you are, what you do. We've got a few topics picked out for us today that are fascinating and that can make a big difference in people's lives in terms of mental performance and training effectiveness. So let's dig into it. The first thing I wanted to chat with you about was the idea of mental toughness and how the way that we speak to ourselves can change our mental toughness positively or negatively. Can you give us some insights into that?
Yeah, you know, the reason I was thinking about this is there was a new paper out from some researchers at the University of Laval and trying to define mental toughness, because this is a topic we all understand, right? Like, we all understand intuitively the idea of people being mentally tough or ourselves being mentally tough in some kind of contexts, but not others. But putting your finger on what that means is challenging. So they've come up with this model that it's actually quite a complex model with various different psychological resources all interacting. But the crux of it is mental toughness isn't something that some people have and other people don't. It's something that we all have depending on the context. And it comes to the fore when you're pursuing challenging goals. And then you have to draw on two things: on your self-efficacy, which is your belief in yourself or your confidence that you can achieve your goals, and self-control, your ability to resist taking the easy option, to resist giving up and do something challenging. And so the question then, so once you have a definition, then you can think of ways of, well, how do I get better at this? As opposed to just saying, I wish I was tougher. You can say, if I want to be tougher, I need to work on, let's say, my self-efficacy. How do I convince myself that when things are going poorly, I am capable of achieving those challenging goals? And so, like you said, self-talk is a great way. Taking control of your inner monologue can really change outcomes, because it changes how willing you are to push if you believe you're capable of achieving those challenging goals.
That is really interesting. Self-belief is critically important. I look at my daughter right now. She's becoming a reasonably good swimmer. She's training a lot. And she's blessed right now that she has some amazing self-belief. She's got great belief in herself, and she speaks to herself really, really well. It's cool to watch. That confidence, that belief is something I believe that we can cultivate, we can develop, we can practice, that we can improve. And I would love your thoughts on that, because I'd like your thoughts on what happens when we're in a moment and we think, you went, no, I'm out. This is too much. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this. Yet it's at those moments when we can make that pivot into actually sticking with it and getting over the challenge that we are faced with in that moment. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think not to be slightly negative, but what I will say is when you're in that moment, when you're in the crucible, that's not the time. It's too late at that point. You need to lay the groundwork leading up to it. I mean, it's not, you know, like I'm overstating it a little bit. Of course, there's a role for digging deep in the moment, but it's very hard to change your mindset, under fire when things are already going difficult or going poorly. What you need to have done is systematically worked to build up your self-confidence, to make it a second nature that, at mile 20 of the marathon, your automatic response is not, this is stupid, why am I doing this, I just want to quit. Your automatic response is, this is what I've trained for. It's difficult. It's hard for everyone. We're all struggling, but I've trained for this, so I can do this. And you can't expect to sort of rewire your brain in the heat of the moment. What you need to be doing is in your training, you need to be thinking about what's going through my mind when things are going. And you know, this doesn't just apply to physical training, but in difficult situations, what goes through my mind, and what would be better? What would be a nicer thing to be going through my mind? Okay, can I come up with some phrases that remind me of my strengths, or that make me feel motivated, remind me why I'm doing this, that will become automatic, that, okay, when I get to this point in the challenge, this is what I'm going to say to myself. It's very hard to use willpower to change your mindset, but habit is much more powerful.
So we are preparing for training, not just physically warming up your body, but also warming up your mind as well with those affirmations that you could tell yourself in the training when things get challenging. And in that process, you then build a capacity and habits around your mental skills in the moment when you're doing that physical task. I imagine that this also applies to cognitive load at work as well. So it's, sports competitions, athletic training, fitness sessions, but also in the meeting when it really matters. Also in a test that you're writing, I'm sure that this could apply, and you, without preparation, default to whatever it is that you've been practicing. But if you prepare, you can be ready to think the right way in the right moment. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're on stage giving a talk or a presentation, it's very hard to step out of yourself and say, okay, here's how I should change my mind. But if you've given that talk, every time you rehearse, you've been aware of, okay, what are the thoughts that are going through my mind now? What are the thoughts that might be going through my mind when I'm in front of the audience, when I give smaller versions of the talk, or when I give other presentations? I think that a really good first step is to start listening, tapping into what the thoughts in your head are. Because I think we all have streams of thoughts that are constantly running through our minds, and often we just don't even think about them, that we just take them for granted as kind of the background noise. But if you start to listen to what you're telling yourself, so I know for me, as I started to dig into this research, I was like, wow, I really say some pretty nasty things to myself when things are going poorly. And that's probably not helpful. Maybe I should work on that. And becoming aware of it is the first step to then being able to change it.
Does meditation perhaps help us to get that perspective on what our thoughts are and whether they serve us or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are many different roads. One of the ones that there has been some research on, like mindfulness which is one sort of element or one approach to meditation, that ability to detach and observe the thoughts that are going, observe sort of objectively what the thoughts that you're experiencing, and hopefully non-judgmentally. So that's another important point. You shouldn't, if you notice a negative thought going through your head, you shouldn't say, wow, I'm a failure for having thoughts that I'm a failure. It becomes sort of a recursive process, we all have negative thoughts, and you're not going to get rid of them entirely, but you want to be a little more dispassionate about them. And that's really one of the fundamental goals of practices like mindfulness, is to be able to see those thoughts coming through without always reacting emotionally to them. And so that's another aspect of self-talk, is not that it, you know, everything is for the best in this best of all possible worlds and I never have any negative thoughts, but you're able to handle them and sort of consciously try to displace them with more positive thoughts.
Brilliant. That leads me into my next major topic that we wanted to get into, and that is mental effort during physical training. As much as we put physical effort into our activities, there's also a mental effort that goes in as well, and balancing those two things can be tricky. I would love your thoughts on that also.
Yeah, and this is a topic that I've really been interested in, and there's sort of a mystery for me. I was a very serious competitive distance runner in my teens and 20s. And I've continued to enjoy training and competing, you know, to this very day. But one of the things that I was always curious about, in my early 30s, I was still training with a group, but I was no longer serious about it. I'd switched focuses, but I was doing as many miles and I was doing the same workouts with a lot of the same training partners that I used to, but I was a lot slower. I didn't care as much. And I always tried to, I had trouble putting my finger on how come running 100K a week with three hard workouts a week made me this fast at one point in my life, but much slower in another part in my life. And the physical training was the same, but the mental focus was different. And so I started to put that together. There's some really interesting studies. One that came out early in the COVID lockdown, there was a basketball team in Scotland that was basically, they were locked in their apartments for a few months. So their strength and conditioning staff ran a study where they had half of the team do imaginary strength workouts, like really detailed imaginary strength workouts. Okay, like take it through. Imagine you're going through your warm up, you're stretching. Okay, now we're going to do three sets of 8 reps of, you know, squats. So now you're doing the first one, you're doing this many pounds. Like, it sounds actually quite horrendously boring, but the upshot was that after, I can't remember if it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that, they measured, and the group that had done the imaginary workouts was substantially stronger than the group that hadn't. And their assumption is that the muscle fibers themselves weren't doing anything, but the imagining doing the workouts was strengthening this sort of neuromuscular connections, the signaling process, and the ability to command muscles to contract, and it made people stronger. And there's other, this is one study in a broader literature where they've done studies where it's like, okay, two groups lifting the same weight, but one group is imagining that the weight is like immovable. And so they're straining much harder than they maybe needed to, but they're absolutely focused on giving their all in that workout. And they get a better outcome. So I think, to me, this is kind of a metaphor for, again, like the mystery that I was facing, like why at 30, I mean, you know, 30 is not that old for an endurance athlete, but why was I, when I wasn't focused, why was I getting less gains? And I think giving your all, or even if it's not your all, being present for hard work, whether it's cognitive work or physical work, it makes a difference than it between just going through the motions. Just being in the chair or doing the workout or going and doing the run is not the same as bringing your all to doing it. And the neuromuscular connections are relevant if you're lifting a bicep, but I think the same principle is true, that you're training your brain and you're training your nervous system to do what you want it to do. And the more you put in, the more you get out.
Could you expand a little bit on the idea of being present for the hard work? That means in the moment when you're doing the run or you're doing the lifting and you're doing the cognitively demanding task at work, you're writing the test, you're answering the question, whatever that happens to be, you are able to then bring your attention into the present moment, even during those difficult circumstances. That seems to be a key factor that enables us to do better in that instant. I'd love your take on that. Mainly because I was at the gym this morning, I did notice that, you know, people were there with their phones out, not present. That sort of leads me to think that maybe we're not always in the right headspace when we are actually doing that training. And of course, this is a podcast for people that are into high performance. They want to do better, right? So if you're listening to the show, you're interested in high performance, you're interested in achievement, and I'm sure that everyone would love to know, like, how do we dial things in to be more focused for the training, the performances that matter to us all in our days?
Yeah, well, let me answer a little bit tangentially, which is to say that it's hard to do the hard, to be present and to give everything to something is difficult. So it's not necessarily that everything you do in life has to be at this high effort. And so, for instance, as a runner, there are some runs where I am, if I want to get the most out of it, I need to be there for it. And I need to be focused on not what I'm going to have for dinner tonight, but how I'm running right now and how I'm performing and how my body is moving. There are other runs that are part of, you know, accumulating 100 kilometers a week where you're just like, I'm daydreaming. I'm chatting with friends. I have no effort. And if I tried to bring that same intensity to every run that I did when I was training hard, if I was training, you know, 12 times a week, I would be burned out within me. So it's not necessarily that more and harder is always better, but that mental effort is a part of what makes a hard or a productive workout hard and productive. And so, like I said, I don't want to give the impression that I know all of what might be happening in this process. I have a strong intuitive feeling. And then there's these studies that, you know, these weightlifting studies that suggest to me that, yeah, there is something about, you know, in the physical realm, it's like you're getting the form right. You're getting the feedback. You're feeling what it's supposed to, what the movement is supposed to feel like when you do it right. And, you know, I'm a journalist. I've written a lot of articles in the last 20 years. I can rattle through some articles that meet the minimum requirements for what I'm trying to do professionally that are not the same as the ones where I really am able to banish distractions for hours at a time and really get into and think carefully. Like there's a difference in my work. I'm perfectly aware there's a difference between good and great, or maybe someone else would say a difference between really bad and less bad. And I think one of the elements of that difference is to what extent am I fully there for it and just focused on it, as opposed to thinking sort of instrumentally about here's what I need to do to fulfill the minimum requirements. And look, I have kids and they're just getting to the age where they're having some work they need to do at home. And it's like, did you actually do what you were, you know, achieve the goals you were supposed to achieve by doing this? Or are you just trying to think what check marks is the teacher going to tick off? And what do I need to do to get those check marks? And what's the minimum I need to do to get those check marks? There's times in life when it's worth satisficing, but there's also times if there's things you care about that it's like, no, you need, it doesn't matter what the check mark is. You need to be fully immersed and engaged in whatever you're doing.
That is so interesting, which leads us into our last piece that I want to cover today. And that is that we can vary our mental intensity and direct it towards what it is that we are doing. Some of it might require deep intensity, yet some of it might benefit from a lot lower intensity. That can be true for our training, for our performances, and also in terms of our ability to recover and regenerate. We can train and perform, but then also go deep into rest, recovery, and regeneration. These days, there's all sorts of wearable tech that we can use around heart rate variability that enables us to get a better sense of how our physiology is reacting. Any updates for that from your perspective?
Yeah, I find this a really fascinating area. Like, you know, in the broadest context, it's like, as you said, we're surrounded by data now. What do we do with it, and how does it make things better? And one of the most promising areas is, okay, the data is going to tell you when you wake up in the morning, is today a day to really go for it, or is today a day to chill out and recover? There's been a bunch of studies lately which try and test this premise using things like heart rate variability, where it's like, okay, two groups, you're going to do 8 weeks of training. It's going to be the same training. So it's not that one group's training harder, but the way we're going to organize it is one group, you're going to do two hard workouts a week and three easy days a week. And it's going to be Mondays and Thursdays that you go hard. And the other group, it's going to be, we're going to aim for two hard days a week and three easy days a week. But if on the day when you're supposed to go hard, the data indicates that you're, not doing, your heart rate variability is not great, we're going to push off the workout for a day. We're going to delay it. And if on one of the rest days, you're actually, all the systems are like, wow, it looks like you're ready to hammer, then we're going to hammer. And what they find is, at least what the initial studies suggest is that the group that varies their training depending on their readiness and recovery gets better results, even though they do this basically the same amount of training. But they, so it's not that they end up training harder. It's not that it magically, it's not that the recovery is smart enough that it gives them extra workouts. It's just that by doing the workouts when they're ready and not pushing when they're not ready, does better. Now, the caveat I'll say is, okay, so this says you need to be, to wire yourself up like a Christmas tree and be taking all sorts of data and have deep brain implants so that you can know when you're ready to go. And my question has always been, okay, you compared a completely rigid training plan to this heart rate variability guided training. What if we added a third group that says, hey, when you're tired, don't push so hard. And when you feel great, push harder. What if we decoupled the technology from the idea of having a responsive training or development plan? There have been some studies. One study recently combined that. So they said, okay, we're going to take three pieces of data: heart rate variability, an index. It was a running study, so an index of heart rate at a given running speed. So there's the slope of the speed heart rate curve, which is telling you how well your body's handling the training. And third, your perceived effort. How do you feel this morning? And if you had two red flags from those three things on any given morning, your training was reduced. If you had one, your training stayed the same. If you had zero, your training increased. And again, this worked out well. But I still ask the question, okay, but what about take out all the technology? What if you just had either yourself or in conversation with a coach or something, you say, hey, I'm tired today. Maybe you shouldn't, go to the well today. Hey, I feel great today. All right, today's a good day to push. I don't know I'm a bit of a like tech skeptic, but I'm open to the idea that heart rate variability can be, or other equivalent forms of feedback, technological feedback can give, maybe sleep tracking or whatever, can give you some information that's helpful. But I think the more important message is, and I imagine people listening to this podcast are like me in a lot of ways. They're driven. They want to push, and so they're setting goals. They're setting schedules. And so that's where you can get locked into, well, Thursday's supposed to be hard day, We don't skip hard day because I'm not weak. I'm not mentally weak. I'm mentally tough. I just worked on my self-efficacy. And so I know I can do it. It's not whether you can do it, it's whether you should do it. And so finding some ways, whether it's with technology or with being in tune with your feelings, to tell the difference of the days when you need a little bit more rest or when you don't.
Alex, you always put things into context for us. You take very complicated subjects and make them actionable and understandable. Totally appreciate you taking the time today to hang out with us and to share your wisdom. Again, cannot thank you enough for being here with us today.
Thanks a lot, Greg. It's always fun to talk.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Dr. Greg Wells podcast. If you found this show informative and helpful, check out my blog at drgregwells.com for additional insights and resources on health and human performance. I update the blog a couple times a month. To stay up to date on the latest tips, articles, and videos, be sure to follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells. My goal on social is to keep your health and wellness and positivity at the forefront of your mind, and so I would be thrilled to connect with you there. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing to the podcast. That helps us out a ton, and leave a review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and helps me to continue to produce valuable content that's relevant to all of you. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. That helps a ton as well. And that brings this week's show to an end. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Have a great week, everyone.